Welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
We're going to look at one of the biggest comics in the world, Ed. Before we do, though, let's talk about your next big comic.
The second biggest comic in the world, potentially. Red Room, issue 1 and 2 are available for pre-order at this very moment through the Fantagraphics website. You could hit the link tree in the description below the video to get there. Thousands of people have done so already. Thank you guys very much for supporting the project in that way. Right now, your store can start ordering Red Room issue number 1. It's in the catalog. The store knows what to do. Just go to the shop, ask for it. The comics can also be read ahead of time at my Patreon, patreon.com/edpiskor. $3 will get you the archive there, and you can read issues 1 and 2 with new strips showing up every Tuesday. So this is modern day black and white horror comics for the new millennium, Jim. Can you say new millennium when 21 years of it have been happening?
It's still kind of new to me.
It's new to a millennium that's like, what, 1,000 years?
Exactly. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, we probably have another 150 years we can call it new. You can join me on Patreon at patreon.com/JimRugg, where I post lots of my process, making of original art and comics. And currently I am doing a page-by-page comparison of Street Angel's Dogs. These are two versions of the same story that I made for Image Comics. Street Angel's Dog published as their free comic book day issue in 2018, but the first version was the first comic I made for Image whenever they picked up Street Angel. It was never published by them. I'm going through and basically showing the original and the redraw, including things like scripts, changes to the script, changes to the art, and talking about my process and my thinking behind those changes. So if you like our comparison videos on other people's drawing the same comic twice, this is a chance to see, get an inside look at what I am doing, and that is patreon.com/JimRugg. We are here today, Ed, to talk about Golgo 13 by Takao Sato.
Sounds good to me, Jimmy. I discovered it with the video game. I had no idea whatsoever that there were comics, that it was from a comic, but somebody made no, I think either John Pham or Brian Lee O'Malley made a comment when I went to Mom's house, grabbed a bunch of my Nintendo tapes and shot a bunch of photos, and they were like, dude, you have like all like comic-inspired like video games.
That's
and,
funny.
And what it was I just liked drawing, and I liked to see, you know, sometimes there'd be a lot of airbrush covers and stuff like that, and just to see black line drawing, I was attracted to that, you know, so I'm the guy who bought Wall Street Kid because of the EC homage cover and just shit game. So cool video game. This is how I discovered it, and it wasn't even until years later at the video store where I saw there were Golgo 13 anime. Now I'm like, oh, this is a big, there's a bigger world for this character out there, and little did I know that it comes from manga.
A very successful game, if I remember correctly. Like, I remember this being pretty popular, you know, Nintendo being my elementary school age and in
good
the
game.
Middle school. And it was, I think, pretty successful. That's not always the case with these video games, but in this case, I believe it had a pretty good span, lifespan.
There's sex in it, and it's cool to see how they get that across, man.
So probably a lot of Westerners, that would have been their first experience with this. And the book that we're going to look at today is this comic, published by Lead Publishing Company. So the Golgo 13, if you're looking for it at home, if you want to pick it up, it's mostly published by Viz Comics. You know, these are Viz editions, you know, the collections, the book collections. These are published by Viz in the early days of Viz, whenever they were still not quite to the kind of Tankobon approach of publishing books, but publishing it in more comic-friendly formats. So this is your unusual version of this. It was published for two issues, 1989, they did a couple of digests as well, but I think this was all motivated by the video game release.
Yeah, I mean, there's maps and stuff in the back,
yes,
to sort of help you through the game.
And to give a little bit of context to Golgo 13, starts in 1968, 280 million volumes of it in print. I think at least 195 volumes collected in Tankobon, which is just staggering to me.
Every time you go to a shop in Japan, there will be one whole bookshelf that is the Golgo 13 bookshelf.
There's a great Man Ben episode.
Yes.
Where there's basically a Golgo 13 building
there
in
is.
Tokyo
where
this is made and maintained and where this lives.
200 million volumes that will buy you some real estate in a very small island where they're not making more land.
Well said. So Golgo 13 is a professional hitman with no emotion. He's a killing machine. kind of like the Terminator. And I dig it, man. These stories when I come across them. We're going to look at this one, but before we dive in, I just want to show what some of these other versions look like. These are color. This is the Viz editions, and it's kind of a weird color treatment and, you know, reproducing screen tones with this color treatment. Interesting. I'm always interested in processes and how this stuff looks. I don't love this color. The one that we are going to look at, number one of the LED publishing company series, black and white. And I do love the way this one looks. It's kind of beat up. It feels almost like you're reproducing it out of the like the phone books, the manga digest, you know, the first printings that are on terrible paper and cheap printing and stuff. And I love that aesthetic. So this is the one we're going to check out. But probably if you want to read GoGo 13, these are editions to pick up. And Ed, you had a pretty good story.
Yeah.
When you're looking
for these.
I have a suggestion.
So I just pulled two volumes off the shelf, and I should have pulled maybe a stack. So what you do when you're shopping for your GoGo 13s, these are not in linear order. They're just a collection of maybe the best of GoGo 13. Who knows what the rhyme or reason was, but there will be stories from 2007. There will be stories from 1965 or whatever, 1971. And you want the old ones because our guy, Takao Saito, probably had a hand in those. Like, in the Man Bin episode, he's very salty about, why do people say that I do not make the GoGo 13 comics? And then you see for the entire episode that he doesn't make them and just tells other people what to do. So the way that you could find the old ones is if you take a look at the top right here, you see? And when you see full bleed or you see black touching the edge of the paper, that's the more modern printing. So you know that this is probably done by his jobbers at that GoGo 13 building. When you see no bleed and you just see pure white paper, that's the old school stuff, man. So you could bet that is probably from the hand of the original creator. So that's just a tip for those of you out there who want to read the GoGo 13 comics that were done by the OG and not his staff.
All right. And one last word on the LED publishing. There are two issues of this. One of them, the second one, is printed with kind of a similar coloring treatment as the first Viz comics.
Yeah.
So, again, this is the one I love the aesthetics of this one. So if you find this in a dollar bin, man, scoop it up because it's a really cool aesthetic, I think.
Now, listen, we laid out sort of what we know, right, about GoGo 13. Now, I have a question that I have to pose, and there will be somebody in the audience who will know. This story, the Impossible Hit, is it the first GoGo 13 story? And I ask that because it is the first episode of the more modern anime series it's adapting this story. So it clearly has significance. Is this the most popular GoGo 13 story? They lead off with a bang, and it's been adapted, so it makes me think that this story has significance. It's a good one. It's a cool one. But I do have those questions about where this is in rank and file in terms of the pantheon of 150 volumes of 200-page books.
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm kind of curious now. That hadn't even crossed my mind, and now I want to know, too.
Yeah.
Well, good. Let's dig in. I like the mechanical lettering. It adds a coldness to this story and a certain kind of sophistication, you know, almost an adult, mature look. And set in New York City, so a couple of stock kind of images of New York. I think they all look good, and I think that black and white fits that kind of lettering aesthetic. We talk about mechanical lettering and how, you know, when it works and when it doesn't. For me, that's one of the things I like about this treatment. So he's just waking up, puts his rifle together in his hotel room, gets all set up on the balcony, and, you know, looking through a rifle scope. This is also what I think of as when I was first learning about manga, like, say, you know, Scott McCloud describing it or something. This kind of cinematic treatment is something that you'll often hear about in descriptions of manga and just the clear storytelling.
Yeah, it's sick, man. Like, use the circle motif to transition into the past, the lead up to this moment.
It's so economical the way the storytelling is built in this. You know, nobody would be confused by what's happening here. It does make me wonder how this was originally serialized, because you see it's broken up into these, like, chapters, but they don't seem long enough to be what I think of as manga chapters.
Yeah.
Like, this feels like this could be maybe an episode, maybe two.
There will be, like, I've seen this stuff serialized, and there will be acts within that chapter, and sometimes those will continue in other issues and stuff. But you'll see them within the same week.
I always love, too, in manga, whenever, like, the story's set in New York or set in Chicago or somewhere. And, you know, what does that look like?
Yeah, please. Please show me what it looks like from your point of view.
Yeah, that stuff's always really, really cool. So this is a flashback. We saw him looking through the scope, and then we see the cut to the Ferris wheel of the flashback, which is the second act. And it's pretty much just telling him what the target is.
Yeah, I like that. I like that they go on the Ferris wheel together. It's like so romantic. They go on the Ferris wheel together to have that conversation.
That's amazing. I didn't even realize that's where this conversation was taking place, because it looks like a room, but it's that little little cab that they're riding, the little cart. That's funny. It reminds me of like the big Ferris wheel in Tokyo has those carts if you ride it. So it's different than like our Ferris wheels here that are just a seat, a bench.
Right.
That's real funny. Now I wonder which one it's like in Coney Island. All right. So cut back to real life time. We've got all the information we need delivered in a page and a half of who this guy is and why he wants to kill him. He's a mafia guy who controls a bunch of interest in the stock exchange. So, of course, Golgo 13, he is a world-class hitman. One shot, gets his target. And kicks the shell out of the gun. The shell falls off of the balcony.
Yeah, what happens, he's hearing that, like, the cat distracts him, is what happens. And he loses stock of his shell casing. Because if it wasn't for the cat, this shell would not get out of his grasp. He's a pro that way.
This shot of what you see, like, through the scope and what he sees is going to come up again and again.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to see, like, when they're trying to figure out what's going on, how did this happen, we're going to see that shot again and again. So, Act 3, the cartridge. This is a little bit strange. I feel like you could get away with this. I don't think this cartridge gets discovered. But in the story, it does. You know, it's his one slip-up. It's sloppy. A guy walking down the street sees it, and he's a guy that these police have, I guess, shaken down before. So when they see him on the street, they run up to him, see how he's doing.
That stop and frisk shit that they did in NYC. These Japanese dudes got that part right.
So good news. The guy is staying clean, but he brings attention to the cop, this cartridge on the ground. Like, I don't know what this is, but it's still hot. This is a freshly fired bullet from somewhere. And so the cop makes note of that. And we cut to the target of Golgo 13. Cut to the office. You see the bullet hole in his office window and the bullet hole between his eyes.
Yeah, man. So when you see those two bullet holes, you know you have to going to have your Bunk and McNulty scenario where they're saying the F word a million times with a measuring tape.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly what happens.
That's what we're doing.
Is the detectives roll in and start pointing things out. And there's some fun procedural stuff, like measure the hole in the window. There was an exit wound, or an exit, the bullet exited and lodged in the wall. So measure that, and that'll give us our angle of where the shooter is coming from. And it's kind of a mystery once they put that together, because
the buildings have no windows.
It doesn't make sense.
But you still see. See, they give it to you every time. Every panel,
it's so clear.
They give it to you.
Such clear storytelling. I love that. It's there's no words explaining this. It's just visually unmistakable. So he can't figure this out. Like, the building that you can see that has a window is just too far away to do this kind of shot. It's 500 yards away.
And there's your guys. Fuck. Fuck. Fuck.
That's the other part that I like about this comic, is how contained the story is. It all makes sense. It's very straightforward in that way. They're comparing notes, and they find out about this bullet. This guy runs in with this update that they found a rifle cartridge on the floor, or on the ground, and it was still hot, and it's kind of in the right direction. So they're off to try to solve this mystery. It just doesn't seem possible. If somebody could actually pull off that shot from 500 yards, they would be winning medals in the Olympics.
Yeah. This is a storytelling piece, too. Just this, like, narrow band of light coming through, you know, two giant skyscrapers. It's telling you.
I love this stuff.
Yeah.
This is the stuff that I live for. It's so economical and perfect. Graphic. It's great stuff. I like all the textures too. This is fun just looking at kind of the manga making where you see the textures of screens
they
on the walls.
They overuse these shits, man.
That's a you might be able to guess the time period based on how busy the wallpaper design is in that office.
Take a little window pane, manage to stare at it for a couple of weeks.
All right, they go to the hotel, the building where that shell casing was found outside of it. They rouse the manager. They get access to these rooms that they think it could be. And up they go to the top floor. And what do they find whenever they knock on the door? International hitman.
You know how you say that the cartridge won't be discovered? They're talking to the manager of a hotel that has like 1,000 rooms about a specific guy, and he knows everything about. Oh yeah, he's a Japanese guy, and you know, pretty quiet, and blah blah blah.
That's true.
We're just having fun here. There's 1,000 rooms here. It's a giant skyscraper, and this little grizzled turd knows everybody.
I always hear like the comic John Mulaney makes fun of any of those cop dramas. But like Law and Order, where they're questioning a bartender in a busy Manhattan club, and it's like, oh yeah, last Tuesday at 11:30. Guy looked nervous. You ordered Shirley Temple. I remember him very well. All right, so they get in the room with Golgo 13. I thought it'd be real easy to have him just cleared out at this point. But man, these cops are on the case. They've got a hot shell casing that they've tracked down. They get him in the room. They run through these various scenarios. Where's the gun? You know, trying to get a search warrant in time before he goes on his way. I love all the building shots. Yeah. Like any of this stuff. That's part of that industrial feeling that I think the lettering complements. Mm. And it's what I like about it. Like, I would love comics that look like this. I wish there were more of them. That's another thing. Watching this at home, commentators, if you know other comics that look like this aesthetically, post them in the comments, because I am curious to see more stuff that looks like this. It's almost, it isn't Outlaw, but it feels like it has its own aesthetic, Ed.
Yeah, sure.
So they're trying to get this case together before Golgo 13 just leaves the country, because, I mean, they don't really have anything on him. They believe this is the guy, but no evidence at all, and it's an impossible shot, so they're going to need something. As they are accepting their loss and on their way out and realizing like it's not going to happen, our detective hero spies like the garbage chute and thinks, let's go check that the trash bins out, see if you can find a gun there. They've worked out calibers. They know exactly what they're looking for. And lo and behold, out of the trash bin emerges the weapon. How's he going to get out of this, Ed?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's good stuff, man. And they keep building up the stakes, so... Like, when our guy is going out to, you know, test the scope and just try to find the building that, you know, the shot would take place, all that, they're looking at wind charts and all kinds of... So, like, not only is it 500... I mean, this guy, Golgo 13, he's a Mary Sue, man. He can do everything. And he can shoot something 500 yards away. He can shoot against wind, shoot against sunlight, I think, is like another obstacle. It's like there's like 4 obstacles that make this an impossible shot, but he's the guy.
It's a fun way to build a character, because as the policeman's putting together all the obstacles that you have to overcome to do this, it's just describing what a badass Golgo 13 is as a hitman and an assassin.
You know what one conceit is that isn't badass, but they play it up a whole lot here, is how it's in between two buildings, and it's like, well, if you're going to shoot somebody in a window, it's not like anything else matters, you know? But they play that part up huge.
I'll say this, if this were realism, like, the air would be different in between those two, and it would mess up stuff.
Yeah.
Golgo 13 could do it.
Right.
But it certainly would make things much, much harder. I like all that stuff, though. I do think it's really cool as a way to, like, introduce this guy as being a super badass. And the last piece that comes in here, what this phone call is the Weather Bureau check. And it comes in at the wind speed was 20 feet per second. That must be 20 miles per hour is what would make more sense there, I think. I've never heard feet per second in regards to wind. You do feet per second in regard to bullet speed coming out of the muzzle, out of the end of the rifle. But 20 feet per second, I feel like that's a translation thing. Almost like kilometers or something, you know, if they were using that. But let's say 20 miles per hour, which would be a significant wind, and it's blowing at them. It's, he said, you know, if it was a tailwind, maybe, but as a headwind, there's just no way. And that's the part that defeats him. You see the detective hang his head whenever he hangs up the phone, because you're just not going to convince a jury. It's too much evidence to the contrary. Even though he believes definitely this is the guy who shot and killed him, you're not going to convince a jury. And has to let him go.
Yeah.
I can already tell what a judge would say. Throws the gun down, pissed off. It's good stuff. And love this overhead shot. We've seen this a couple times in recent videos, and I love that bird's eye view looking down at the street from above. Good stuff, man.
It is.
Gets away. Manhattan, New York.
And in the anime, the one thing that they sort of do that's just a little better thematically is they tie the cat in at the very end as like the book end sequence. You just see the cat roaming around the hotel, and it's just a nice little grace note.
Yeah, I like that. That would have been good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I like when stories, especially short stories like that, will wrap up where you kind of get a nice, put a bow on it at the end. You mentioned at the top of the show, this is obviously video game promo stuff, because here we go getting into the video game, and it's promo about the game, from fighting to like flying helicopters and stuff, showing some of the maps and strategies of how to get through some of these parts.
Those mazes are bullshit, man. The mazes are the only things that make this game not fun when you're in first person mode and you got to do the maze, because there's no payoff getting out of there. And you know what, in the other room I actually do have on graph paper, I do have this graphed out, man.
Did you graph this out like when you were playing it and trying to figure it out?
As you play it, yeah. Like, as you advance every screen, like just add like another piece to your maze. But then it gets so confusing.
That was always my favorite part of playing Dungeons and Dragons, was like the mapping part that would go with it, because it was the same kind of concept.
Yeah, every move, then you add a piece. There's no wall there, so
yeah,
open area to keep exploring.
This was just a semi-random find for me in a 50-cent box.
Yeah.
And whenever I started digging through and reading it, I loved it. Mm-hmm. I wish there were more comics like this. I like the short story format, and I like the presentation of this. It all works for me, and it's fun, and I like the character.
Yeah.
You know? It's kind of a cross between Terminator and James Bond.
Terminator, James Bond with the aesthetics of Lupin the Third.
Perfect.
K-Favors, you good?
I am.
Like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when new vids are available. What do you have, Jimmy?
Join me on Patreon at patreon.com/JimRugg to see a lot of my comics, comics making processes, original art, all that good stuff. Patreon.com/JimRugg.
Red Room issue 1 and 2. It's going to be available in comic shops in a not too distant future, but you could reserve your copies at this very moment through the Fantagraphics website. The link is in my link tree. That's in the description below this video. Also, there is my Patreon, patreon.com/EdPiskor, where you can read these comics ahead of time before they see the light of day in print. The first two stories are there, and $3 gets you the archive.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video to keep up with everything we have going on and what is shaping up to be the year of Cartoonist Kayfabe.
Every year is the year of Cartoonist Kayfabe.
Right.
Let's not get it twisted.
You can also find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
Jimmy, one more set of marching orders, man. We're going to be on our way.
Read more manga.
That's goddamn right.